Today we're going to do something a little different. I know we're in Genesis. We've been going through Genesis, but the lesson that I had today required a lot. And Joe's not here. So I had to recalibrate and totally do something different. Joe said, do not trust Daniel with the overheads. So, yeah, maybe that's what it is. But anyway, I'm just going to jump out of Genesis for one more week, so we'll get back in there, but we're going to do something a little different. I have been, in my devotion time, I've been looking in 2 Samuel, and there's an interesting little guy there in 2 Samuel. You don't hear much about him. His name is hard to pronounce. A little vignette in the Bible, but there's a lot we can learn from him. His name is Mephibosheth. You may remember that name, recognize that name. You have to be careful when you say it. It just doesn't want to come out right. But his story is in 2 Samuel chapter 9. If you want to turn there, because we do not have it on the overheads. Mephibosheth. Now, who this guy was, if you're not familiar with him, King Saul was the first king of Israel. He was a disappointing king, but he did have a son named Jonathan. Jonathan was a very upright of a man, and he was David's best friend. In their younger days, they just bonded intimately with each other. And one of those rare lifelong friendships that just was such a blessing to both of them. Well, Jonathan had a son himself, and his name was Mephibosheth. So David had an affection, an affinity to Mephibosheth because of who his father was, Jonathan. So, now when he was a young man, there's a little story here before we actually get into chapter 9. If you had go back to chapter 4 of 2 Samuel, it tells in parentheses something that happened to Mephibosheth when he was only 5 years old. And it says this in 2 Samuel 4:4. Jonathan, son of Saul, had a son who was lame in both feet. He was 5 years old when the news about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel. That news was that they had fallen in battle. Jonathan and Saul had been killed in battle. So the news came back to the nurse of Mephibosheth. His nurse picked him up and fled. But as she hurried to leave, he fell and became disabled. His name was Mephibosheth. Now, in Old Testament times, when the king died, and somebody new came into power, sometimes it was within the family line, sometimes it was a whole different family line. But you know what happened? When there's a new king, he doesn't want any competition. He doesn't want anybody rising up against him out of vengeance, of rivalry or whatever. So historically, what they would do is they would immediately kill any descendants from the earlier king, just so they didn't have any problems with it. No, there didn't have to be any plot afoot. There didn't have to be any potential problems. They just said, we'll eliminate the problem before it rises up. This is just a common thing they did. And I believe that's why this nurse, it says, picked him up and fled. Because she knew that when King Saul fell in battle, there was going to be a new king. And Jonathan fell at the same time. Jonathan wouldn't have hurt his own son, but with Saul falling, she knew whoever came into power was going to wipe out and kill the family line. So she immediately picked up Mephibosheth and said, let's go find a place to hide. And in the process of doing that, either she fell, he fell, she fell on him, or whatever, but he received an injury. Now, his name, Mephibosheth, things. And next time we talk, as we're going through the genealogy, and that's why I needed the overheads, I need to show you all these names, and you break the names down. Each syllable has a meaning, and you put the syllables together, and you come up with a purpose for the name. So that's why we don't translate names in the Bible, we transliterate names. We take the name, break it apart, and see what it means. Mephibosheth if you break the name apart, it's a weird name. It means shameful breath. Now, how would you like to be the guy in your second grade class whose name was Shameful Breath? Don't hang around old Shameful Breath over there. What it means, most Bible commentators believe, not that he had bad breath, but that he had difficulty breathing. And it was a shame to him. He wasn't like everybody else. In all likelihood, he probably had something like asthma. So he would just be talking or whatever, and he wouldn't be able to catch his breath or wouldn't be able to communicate what was going on. So that was his name. They named him Mephibosheth, Shameful Breath. Now, in Old Testament times, I don't believe they named kids at birth. Because of all of these things, and here's, this is another example, you wouldn't name your child Shameful Breath as soon as he was born unless you were a prophet and you received a prophecy that this guy is going to have asthma or whatever. I think they waited until the child grew up and they developed personality, characteristics, things like that, and they said, okay, here's your name. And it would be like we have nicknames for people today based on something about them. So, at some point, he gets old enough, people realize he has difficulty breathing. He's named Mephibosheth. He also had the other problem that we mentioned in the passage. He's crippled. He was disabled. Again, when you consider that he was 5 years old, when you consider the fact that both of his feet were, he couldn't use them, he couldn't walk, you can kind of put these things together and figure out what happened. The nurse gets up. She's fleeing in haste. Chances are she herself, holding this five-year-old boy or holding his hands, tripped, and they fell down, and perhaps they fell down some steps. Perhaps she fell on top of him. But in all likelihood, what happened was he broke his back. Because, I say this because, at 5 years old, it's almost... it's very difficult to fall and injure both of your feet. You could fall and break a foot, break an ankle, or something like that. But to break both of them so that you can't use your feet is actually kind of hard to do. It also says as soon as he fell, he became disabled. So it was an instant thing. If there was broken bones involved in that, then likelihood is they would have become infected. He probably would have lost his kind of thing. So in all likelihood, you can put all these things together. It was a quick injury. It was to both feet, and it was instantaneously. He probably broke his back. So he's probably paralyzed from the waist down. That would also explain how he may have had a respiratory problem, because, as you know, there are people who have... spinal cord injuries often have respiratory problems too, because they can't exercise their lungs. Their lungs can't get strong just from normal exercise. So I'm going to operate on the assumption that he was paralyzed from the waist down and that his breathing problems was probably a result of lung infections or weak lungs, things like that. So regardless of if I've got the diagnosis correct or not, this guy's in a terrible state. He can't walk, and he's got a breathing problem. In that culture, this guy, Mephibosheth, didn't have much to live for. Just the fact that he can't walk alone is... the fact that he can't breathe good is another big problem. The fact that he's a surviving member of the previous king is a problem. So he's got problems all the way around. What kind of future did this guy have? Not much of a future. Until David enters the scene. And this is where we're going to pick up in 2 Samuel chapter 9, verse 1. David, bless his heart, he's established his kingdom. He's refusing to do what previous kings have done in the past, which is to wipe out the relatives of your enemy. He says this: "Is there anyone still left in the house of Saul to whom I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake. Now there was a servant of Saul's household named Ziba, and they summoned him to appear before David. And the king said to him, "Are you Ziba?" "At your service," he replied. And the king asked, "Is there no one still alive from the house of Saul to whom I can show God's kindness?" Answered the king, "There is still a son of Jonathan. He is lame in both feet." "Where is he?" the king asked. Ziba answered, "He is at the son of Amiel in an area called Lo-Debar." Lo-Debar. Again, translation, Lo-Debar means a place where there is no pasture, a barren place, a rocky place, a place you don't want to live, Lo-Debar. It would consist only of basically rocks and sand and things like that. It would have been a place of destitution. Nobody would want to be there because you can't, agriculturally, you can't make a living there. So why did Mephibosheth live in Lo-Debar? It's very simple. He's trying to save his life. He's trying to be in a place where people got to go way out of their way to even see him. He's trying to let King David know, "I am no threat to you. I'm going to live way out here in the middle of the desert. You don't have to worry about me, King David." By the way, he's 5 years old when he falls and becomes lame. He's still got to be a very young man. He may be less than 10 years old at this point in time. I would think at the very he's a young teenager at this time. So here he is, Mephibosheth. He's living in this dry and rocky place. He has all sorts of problems. But King David sends for him. Verse 5. So King David had him brought from Lo-Debar. When Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David, he bowed down to pay him honor. And King David said one word, "Mephibosheth." He said it in a way that was caused him to relax and to not fear his life. Because I'm sure as he was summoned to the king, he probably thought, "This is it. He found out where I lived. He knows I'm starting to get a little bit older now. He's going to take me out." But David says to him in a respectful tone, "Mephibosheth." I can remember when I was growing up, my father said to me one time, or he said it more than once, I just remember it. He said the sweetest sound in anybody's ear is the sound of their own name being uttered respectfully. He said, "Son, when you are trying to make a good impression on people, when you're trying to gain their respect, when it's important to you what they think about you, say their name. Say their name respectfully. Bring it up in the conversation. Don't refer to them in a pronoun sense. Call out their name." It has served me well through the years. And I remember, and when people say my name in a conversation, somebody I'm meeting or something, and they repeat my name, it kind of feels good. I kind of like that. And what King David here did was he said the name Mephibosheth respectfully to him. That one word spoken to him changed his life. And I can't help but remember another time Jesus called the name of a friend of his. It was Mary. When she was at the tomb, she had witnessed the crucifixion of Jesus. She saw him brutally murdered. She went to the tomb to pay respects. The body had been removed. She was even more upset than she was before when she found out the body was removed. She said to the gardener, "Sir, would you just please tell me where you've moved him so I can go and pay my respects?" And Jesus says one word. He says, "Mary. Mary." And when she hears her name spoken by Jesus, she instantly recognizes it's the Master. And she's filled. Jesus just spoke the name, and he took care of all of Mary's problems. Here, David said, "Mephibosheth. At your service," he replied, verse 7. David said, "Don't be afraid, for I will surely show you kindness for the sake of your father, Jonathan." Now again, Mephibosheth has problems. I broke his problems down into three categories. Number one, he was bankrupt. He had been wealthy as a young boy because of his grandfather and because of his father. But the minute they died, he immediately became bankrupt. He's living in this place, in this desolate place, for fear of his life, and he has absolutely no resources. Number two, he had health problems with his breathing. As a result of that, he could not provide for himself, so he needed help. He needed assistance physically. Number three, he was crippled himself. He was lame, which meant he was socially an outcast. In that time, in that culture, if you are in any way blind, crippled, anything like that, leprous, they would look at you like you did something wrong to cause that. So you would have not only the physical stigma, you would have the cultural stigma of what did you do that was so bad that caused you to be paralyzed. So he had these three things going against him: bankruptcy, bad health, and a social outcast. David takes care of all three of his problems in one very short conversation. Look how he does it. "Mephibosheth, I will surely show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan. I will restore to you all the land that belonged to your grandfather Saul." So right there he took care of his problem, his financial bankruptcy. Everything that he had lost at the death of his father and at the death of his grandfather was just now returned to him. The second thing he said to him, "And you will always eat at my table." This took care of his second. He did not provide for himself, being an invalid, basically. So it says here in verse 8, Mephibosheth said, bowed down and said, "What is your servant? A dead dog like me." Then the king summoned Ziba, Saul's steward, and said to him, "I have given your master's grandson everything that belonged to Saul and his family. You and your sons and your servants are to farm the land for him." And this guy had, I think, 10 sons, by the way. He's basically, "And you're going to work for Mephibosheth." He said, "And bring in the crops so that your master's grandson may be provided for. And Mephibosheth, grandson of your master, will always eat at my table." So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem because he always ate at the king's table. He was lame in both feet. So that just took care of his third problem. When David said, "You're going to eat at my table, you're going to sit with my sons," basically he's saying, "I'm going to adopt you, just like you're one of my own children." That would have taken the social stigma, the outcast, totally away. Because now he has gone from a crippled, cannot fend for himself, and is receiving the penalty for his own sin, to being elevated to the king's table and to being considered one of the king's son. So with that pronouncement, King David takes care of all three of Mephibosheth's problems. And it's a beautiful story. It's a wonderful story about a wonderful guy named David and how he showed mercy instead of judgment to someone who really was undeserving of it, and certainly an undesirable type of person. And I think if you paid attention to the story carefully, you may have noticed not only a picture of Jesus in the life of David there, where he shows mercy instead of judgment, but you may also have seen yourself in this story, because we are all like Mephibosheth in some way or another. He was dropped as a five-year-old, through no fault of his own. Have you ever been dropped by somebody through no fault of your own? Have you been hurt physically? Have you ever been hurt emotionally, spiritually? through no fault of your own, something that somebody else did to you that maybe even today you still carry around the scars and the hurts of it. Maybe you regarded somebody as a trusted friend, and that friend took advantage of that relationship. Maybe it was an unfulfilled promise by somebody, a selfish act, a broken proposal, a broken agreement, something like that. These things hurt. And we, in a sense, are like Mephibosheth because we can be hurt through no fault of our own. Now let's add into that a bad case of asthma. This is something that he was either developed early on in life or was born with. It's a condition that he had to continually battle. It's like things in our life that we say, why does this have to happen to me? Why is everybody else seem to not have this problem that I have? Have you ever thought that, said that? I have. I have a list of things that I've written down here. Why me type of things. And a lot of these don't pertain to me individually, but a lot of them do, and I'll let you guess as I go through them which ones relate to me. But here's what I wrote down. Do you ever look at your life and say, why don't I get the breaks that everybody else gets? Why is it always me? Why am I short, bald, and unattractive? Why can't I sing well? Why can't I play the piano? Why do I have such a short memory? Why can't I run as fast as the other guys? Why didn't they want me to be quarterback on a football team? Why couldn't I make cheerleader on a cheerleading team? Why do I have a dead-end job? Why couldn't I get the kind of job that other people have, that I enjoy going to work every day? Why is my alternator always going out in my car? The list goes on. I could just go on and on and on. You, a lot of these things you identify with, you know what I'm talking about. We start to feel sorry for ourselves. And some of these things are legitimate complaints. Some of them aren't. But nonetheless, we are Mephibosheths in that we all have our set of problems. David entered the scene and took care of all Mephibosheth's problems. What does God do with our problems? I can honestly tell you, I have been at points in my life where I've been very, very low. I can remember times when I felt like I didn't have a friend in the world. Like nobody cared. And I think we've all been there. But one of the greatest feelings that I think I've ever felt is that at those times when you feel like nobody really cares, you're not a priority with anybody, when you hear that still small voice of a God who whispers in your ear, I love you, I'm going to take care of you, you feel like, I felt like, I would rather have that than every other relationship with every other person on the face of the earth. Perfect. I would rather be right with God and know that my relationship with Him is real and it's solid and He's there and He's going to take care of me than all the other things that I just listed for you. That's what God does for us. He gives us that priority relationship that makes us realize everything else, while it's nice, it's not necessary. That is why one of my heroes, Corrie ten Boom, when I look at her life and I look at everything she went through, what she went through is probably more torturous than everybody in this room put together. She saw her family murdered. Her sister die a painful death in a concentration camp surrounded by people who hated her just because she was a Jew. She saw countless other friends, countrymen, murdered by people who absolutely just hated them. She was deprived of food, clothing, warmth, things like that. But when you read about her life, one thing that shines out through all of this, and maybe because of all of this, is that she had a relationship with God. And God was as real to her as anybody sitting next to you right now. And she discovered that's all it takes. Everything else is wonderful. It's nice to live in luxury. It's nice to have wonderful friends and all that. But you give me the Lord, and I can do without everything else. So that's what God does for us, Mephibosheths. When we have our problems, we can count on him. The harder things get, the closer he will get to us. The big question is, why does he do it? Why does God care about us? Why does he reach out to us when we're despairing, when we're at such a low point in our life? I think it goes back to the very first verse we read, 2 Samuel chapter 9, verse 1. Listen to this closely. David asked, "Is there anyone still left in the house of Saul to whom I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake?" We see here a special relationship between David and Jonathan. David said, "Jonathan's son, he's my friend." That's why I believe God cares so much for us. Because he says, if you're a friend of my son, if you're a friend of Jesus, I care about you. I don't care if you can't breathe good. I don't care if you're crippled. I don't care if you're bankrupt. I love you. You're a friend of my son. And God says, I'm going to restore to you what you have lost. Joel tells us, remember we went through the book of Joel, I'm going to restore to you the years that the locusts have eaten. Just as David restored to Mephibosheth his prosperity, God restores to us. When we have that relationship with him that's so close and so tight, it doesn't matter about anything else. He restores anything that we have that we're missing in our life. Any pain we have experienced in our life that could not have been as bad as Corrie ten Boom, he will overcome it and replace it with his love. I just had a conversation yesterday. It's funny how these things are always seem to be so timely, with my brother. And we don't usually talk about deep things. We talk about surface things. Football, sports, financial stuff, or whatever. But he said to me yesterday, he said, do you remember several years ago we had an argument, and he said, I didn't talk to you for a long time. Yes, I remember it. He said it was almost 6 years. We didn't talk. And he said, you know, I was thinking about that the other day. And he said, I don't even remember what we were arguing about. And I said, you know, Carl, I said, I don't remember it either. And that's a great thing. That's a picture of what God does in our lives with our hurts. If we put our hurts on him, if we release them to him, little by little, he will cause them to dissolve just like cotton candy in your mouth. It starts out a lot and it goes down to nothing. And that's what he did in my brother's mind. He caused him to totally forget even what even caused the argument. And that's the blessing of that relationship. If we will take advantage of it, if we will trust in the Lord, if we will take our hurts, our cares to him. He can restore it all. And we can be like Mephibosheth. We can be totally restored. What the locust has consumed, he can restore to us. So when you feel like nobody cares, nobody knows your story well, remember, David represents the king, calling out to all of those who are in pastureless lands and dry lands with crippled feet and inability to breathe. He compassionately calls to us, saying, come to me. Let's get our relationship going. Let's get close, me and you. And you'll find that all this other stuff is going to dissolve just like cotton candy. He will call you by name. It will be the sweetest sound you've ever heard. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this beautiful day that you've given us. Thank you for this word in the scripture, this picture in this life of Mephibosheth, which more than anything shows us the attitude that you have about us. That you're not there with a big hammer trying to beat down on us for the sins that we've committed. You're not mad at us. You actually like us. You actually love us. And you love us because we're friends with your son. And it is your desire, Lord, that we have a close relationship with you. You want to restore the years that the locust has eaten. You want us to dine with you. You want to provide us with rich delicacies to eat every single day. Just as Mephibosheth ate regularly at the king's table for the rest of his life, we can eat at your table every day. We can go to you and get as much of you as we want. And we just thank you for that. Lord, I pray we take advantage of that relationship that you so generously offer to us through your son. Pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.